What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope.
Hey. Put a little... I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey. Put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy you've chosen to spend some of your Friday afternoon with us here at WGR. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope has been away for the back end of this week and will be on vacation next week as well. I am the Bulldog. Zach Jones alongside. I've got Sal Capaccio hanging out at Highmark Stadium. We will be continuing to have Sal for this hour, and then 5 o'clock comes and the practice begins there. That's why he's there. And he'll be tied up doing, well, they'll do like a mock broadcast. It won't be on the air, but they do a practice run because there is a preseason game next Saturday. I mean, it's here, folks. There was a game last night, a preseason game that very fittingly, I loved, you know, the kids say, we are so back, right? Like, that's a very, I don't know, even the kids, but I got there just in time to hate on Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh has always annoyed me ever since he acted like a teenage kid when he won a game in Detroit against Jim Schwartz. And like, I just think he's super obnoxious. So not a fan. And I turn the game on and there he is pounding Trey Lance's shoulder pads. Like, oh, here we go. Like, oh my God, dude. And then the game starts and we've got a fumble on the opening kickoff. And of course there's a review and like, okay, here we are. It's all back in all its glory. Here is the NFL. Something else that was featured, in the game, Sal, was the new first down. Are they calling it, is it called Hawkeye? Like the tennis thing? Like what is the name for it? But we saw like a measurement that was not the chain gang.
It's Hawkeye technology, like in tennis, but they're not spotting the ball like Tennessee. I didn't watch the game last night, but apparently Chris Collinsworth said, oh, it's just like tennis. And as Jeremy was pointing out, it's not just like tennis. They're not spotting the ball or telling you where the ball is based on the technology. So the officials will still spot the ball. Nothing changes. Like, let's go back to the AFC Championship game last year. We all know the controversy. That would not change anything what they're doing. Like, the officials are still saying, this is where I think the ball is.
Right.
Nothing changes with that. There's no chip in the ball that's going to determine anything different. They're going to put the ball down. What's different now, though, is once it's put down, they're going to use this electronic technology now to say, is it a first down? And it's going to basically have some sort of whatever, some sort of laser or however they want to do it and show and go, okay, there it is. It's a first down. It reached the line to gain. And if it is, that where they're not going to stop the game and bring out the chains. We have not seen chains come out anyway over the last few years very often. But now they're not going to do it. And the way Sean Smith described it to us in the media is they're going to show it on the big board, on the screen, in the stadium. So they'll show it on TV. And it's going to be kind of like a, I don't know, in that regard, I would say like tennis, right? Which is, there it is,
right?
When you watch a tennis match.
Right.
Here's the thing that's really weird, though, okay? And I can't wrap my head around this right now. And I didn't watch last night to see it. So there still will be down markers on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So the ball starts, let's say, at the 35. You have a person with the 35. You have a person at the 45 with a down marker. There's no chain that connects it, though. There's just two down markers.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think, well, wait a minute. My first thought is, how do you know then where exactly 10 yards are? You could be a little off if you're the other person, right?
Right.
But I think the answer is this, and I'm going to give credit to Carl Jones, our buddy from Channel 4, who brought this up to me, and I said, you're right, Carl, that's exactly right. Over the last couple of years, the NFL made a change. It was a subtle change, but they did this. When there's a first down, it's just on first downs, they do not place the ball at the in the half like hash mark. If it's a first down at the 41 and a half, they put it at the 42 or the 41. They put it there. So therefore, now go back to what I just said about no chain. The person on the other end will know exactly where to put it. Now, during the play, if it's second down or third down, it's just spotted where it's spotted. But when right. you do have a first down, they no longer use, they use only the hash marks right where they are.
Will they always be rounding up?
It's a good question. I think they do. I think they always round up. Maybe it's the closer one. Maybe it's round up or round back. Maybe they determine if it's closer. That could be what it is. I don't know if it's round up or down. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
But that would solve my dilemma in my own brain of, wait a minute, how does the person on the other end of the 10 yards know where to put it?
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so, at least that part of it. I feel like the whole thing is a giant nothing burger. In the end, because of the fact that the 60-year-old, not to pick on 60-year-olds, I'm 60. I don't think you shouldn't want me standing on the sideline trying to figure out in a schmozzle of bodies where the football is when Josh Allen is trying to pick up a fourth and one in the AFC Championship game. I might not be great at that, right? So the fact that that part remains, that's always been. Look, the chain gang is antiquated, and you know, you can. Mike has said it many times. Like, we've got all this technology, and we've still got these guys running out there with the chains, and it just kind of looks ridiculous. I get it, but it's never been the most problematic part of the ball spot and whether it's a first down or not. Correct. It has to do with the person that is running in and getting overruled by the other guy who saw it different or whatever it is. Like, that problem still exists. I don't care how they're determining whether it's a first down or not. That's never been a problem. It's where the ball is put. And if you're not fixing that, I got no time for any of this. Listening to them talk about it on the broadcast last night, like, it was just some great breakthrough. And it's like, what are we talking about? This is not. It's nothing. All you're doing is removing the specter of the guys running in with the chains. And again, like, it looks a little silly, but it was a fine system for determining whether you got the 10 yards or not. The problem is who's putting the ball on the ground. Always has been.
I agree with you, and I would say this. I don't think the NFL did any of this to correct any sort of problem. I think all they did was just try to speed up the game.
Yeah,
that's the issue, right? Which is they weren't even looking at it as we have a problem. They're looking at it as how can we be more efficient and speed up the game. And I'm going to be honest, I like the chains coming out. It created drama. Yeah. I like that part of the game.
Right.
It was really cool. Oh, they're going to bring the chains out. Guys, clear, clear, clear. We got to get the referee to take a look. And I've been on a football field where a referee put a credit card or some. Oh, that's it. Looks like the credit card.
Index card or something.
He put
it
on the chain to see if it would go and touch the football. Right? Like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's totally drama.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do that anymore. Now, you could have drama still with this whole thing on the scoreboard. Let's hit the button. Let's see if it's there. Let's reveal what's behind door number one.
Yeah.
Right, here we go. Monty Hall now. All right, let's go. I mean, we could do that. I get it. But you're right. This doesn't solve the issue of what has come up, and especially in what we saw the AFC Championship game yesterday. Last year, and what people have been talking about since then. But I don't think the NFL believes they have an issue with that. Or if they do think they have an issue, I don't think they've thought at all that they need to in some way address it or recognize it, to be more honest with you.
Yeah, the chip in the ball for the goal line for this, like, I honestly have no idea how cumbersome that technology would be, you know, how quickly someone who would be operating parts of that technology could set the 10-yard grid, a team's in hurry up or something, and maybe there's some honest logistical reason why you can't really do it. But that's the fix. Like, anybody, I've seen this, I think, numerous times over the months since this, it was announced that they were going to use this Hawkeye technology. Like, oh, look at this. The Bills lose a playoff game and there's another rule change. Like, yeah, no, this does not fix what happened in the AFC title game on that quarterback sneak at all. It's just the ball's going where the ball's going. That hasn't changed at all. So I don't know. To me, it's a lot of the NFL to some extent taking a bow for doing nothing really. All they did was change how we're going to find out whether it's a first down or not. And Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really need any of it. And I think I knew all that already, but just seeing it yesterday, and you know how it's the first broadcast of the year. They want to show off the new thing. Oh, look at this. Look how we do this now. And I'm like, no, that I don't care. thanks for nothing, NFL is where I end up on that. So anyway, let's talk a little. We'll hopefully get back to the stadium here before you have to leave us at 5, Sal. But
can I mention, by the way, by being in the stadium right now, the gates have opened. It is awesome watching so many people filter down and these kids running down to be near the wall. Like, it is just, it's amazing. Like, to see the sea of red, white, and blue, the jerseys everywhere. By the way, go back and watch a football game from the 80s. Like, nobody wore jerseys in the stadiums. Nobody wore gear. It's right. Just like regular, hockey, doesn't matter. Hockey, football, baseball, everybody's just got like regular clothing. Now it's all your team colors everybody wears. But I'm watching this right now, Bulldog, and people are coming in the stadium, and they're just flowing down by the wall, and kids everywhere, and it's just great, and this is what this is all about. I love that. And of course, next week is the preseason game. It's Kids Day, kids game, because it's the only preseason game. And I had to just go out to the, you know, when you walk outside where we are in the radio booth here, and we go out to where you first walk in the entrance, I had to do that to go grab my credential for today. And I walk out there, and the first person I see walking in is Daryl Talley. Just now, about 10 minutes ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So he's here tonight for this.
That is fantastic. I hope that's in some sort of team-related capacity, that he'll be available.
I don't know. I didn't have time to ask, but I'm like, whoa, what's up? You know, we said hi to each other. He walked by. He looks great still, by the way. Daryl always looks good. And then, but anyway, he is here tonight, so I am wondering if there's something, you know, going on with that.
All right, awesome. Good to hear that. All right, what I wanted to ask you about is the trade demands. Terry McLaurin, Washington. Micah Parsons, Dallas. McLaurin was yesterday, I think, during our show, right at the end of the show. And then Parsons is this afternoon, just before I got started, and we got started at 3 o'clock. You know, both players, to varying degrees, would be of interest, I think, to any Bills fan. But, you know, how realistic is it at all if the Bills were to, you know, want to kick the tires? I would say this much, Sal. You definitely, and thank you, Sal's turning his camera around for the people watching on Twitch and on YouTube. Sorry, I meant the Twitch and YouTube, to show what he was describing as the fans are starting to filter into the stadium for this open practice. And yeah, I mean, that's a good amount of people down there by the wall already. I'd want to call the Cowboys just because they're the Cowboys. Like, you know, in the offseason when we weren't sure what was going to come with the James Cook contract situation, like, well, if trading him is an option, you know who I want to call? I want to call Dallas, because they might overvalue a running back that only played 44% of the snaps. So get on the horn with Dallas. So if they are going to take calls on Micah Parsons, now that's a different thing than Parsons saying he wants to be traded. The team has to be willing to engage on that. I would want to call just to see, because you just never know what they might do, Dallas. I think their you know, their owner and GM might not be as super sharp as he used to be or anything. So I don't know. I'm calling Dallas, but neither of these guys are realistic targets, are they?
No, I don't think so. The barrier for me has always been not the trading point. It's the price point of once you get them on your team. And, like, you have to pay them then. And the Bills don't have the kind of money to be able to pay these players what they are asking for. Now, in the case of Terry McLaurin, I think he's 30 already, right? Mm-hmm. I think Terry has already turned 30. Like, I don't think the Bills have any interest in paying Terry McLaurin the kind of contract that he wants at the age of 30. Haven't they already kind of demonstrated this, the way they build their wide receiver room? Good player.
I want to say I agree with that. I would not – I mean, he'd be the best receiver on the team, but at what price? $30 million a year for a 30-year-old receiver. Like, they could be getting, you know, Diggs about to hit the cliff again or something. Like, I don't want any part of that myself, you know, recognizing that in a short time frame it could be really good, but I think there'd be long-term maybe problems there with a big contract. Parsons, considering his age, Sal, he should be the highest paid defensive end or pass rusher or linebacker, whatever, hybrid, you know. He should be. He should get more than Watt and Garrett, or more than Hendrickson wants or whatever, because of his age, simply. I mean, not to mention the production.
It is a team you've already made a deal with this year, Kyrie Elam. He is in Dallas. You made a deal with him, right? So you've already know you already have a relationship there. I do think that, like, if would I think that Brandon Bean could make a phone call? Sure, I wouldn't doubt. Like, hey, what are you looking for? You know, and then at the end of the day, he might, you know, get an answer. He just like, yeah, I can't do that. But even if he said, even if it was something that was okay, maybe we could do that. I don't know how he would manage paying him. I do think it's the kind of player they would pay, though, which is interesting, right? It was what I'm saying. Like, McLaurin is the kind of player they wouldn't pay at his age. I do think that's the kind of player they would pay at 26 years old at that position, given how they've been searching for that position and going and swinging big a little bit here with Von Miller and now Joey Bosa and some of the assets that they've used.
Yeah. Just for some frame of reference here, Khalil Mack was 27 when he was traded from the Raiders to the Bears, and the cost of that trade, well, that trade actually was this: 2 first-round picks, a third and a sixth, for Mack, a second, and a conditional fifth is what that trade broke down as. And, you know, that's a lot of stuff, but I would do that. Where the Bills are on their timeline right now, picking at the end of the first round every year, I would have no problem paying the price. The question, of course, becomes if that's the price. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Dallas, if they engage in this at all, will be more unrealistic than that. I don't know. The question is, how do you pay him? I always feel like Sal, whether to be, I don't want to be flippant and say the salary cap doesn't matter, because you hear that sometimes, and I just think that's maybe a little bit lazy. But I feel like for the first year, like this year, you can usually find a way to finagle stuff and keep the cap hit down in year one. Like if he were to come here with a new monster contract, which of course you would, if you're giving up all that, you're paying him. He's at the top of the heap now of those type of players, right? So what is that, over like $42 million a year or something, right? So you're going to pay him like annual average value, but year one, with the way you can allocate the bonuses and how long you make the contract and spread it out and all that, the year one cap hit can be more manageable. So I'm not here to tell you exactly like X, 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 Y, 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 how you would do it. I feel like there's a way that can be done, but it's, still very cumbersome, and it'd be obviously a humongous commitment and a big change because, they just paid Rousseau, they've got Bosa here, and believe me, I know Parsons is a much better deal, much better player than either of those guys probably will ever be, but it's a huge, huge deal to pull off. I wonder if he will actually end up getting traded.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My guess is he won't. I think this is kind of what Jerry Jones does a little bit. He gets it to the point where everybody just starts stirring up a little bit and becomes a bit of drama. And then, we took care of the guy in the end. This is kind of his what he does, how he operates. It's what he did with Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, right? But right now, Micah Parsons has made it clear, like, hey, he wants to be traded. So we'll see where it goes. My guess is they won't. They won't trade him. But you never know. I would say this, too. If he does, I've seen people say Micah Parsons would love to play with Dan Quinn. I could never imagine Jerry Jones trading him to Washington. Right? Come on. That's no way that's happening.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Dallas does have – look, it's all about leverage, right? One might ask, like, well, why is this different than the James Cook situation? They both have a year left on their contract, and, Cook decided to play ball and come in and work his way through this year, and we'll see if anything happens with the contract. I still don't think it will. I know – last time we talked about it, that was your thought too. Parsons is just, it's a different position. It's a premium position that gets paid. And but with all that said, Dallas has, I mean, he's on a fifth-year option this year. Next year they could franchise him. They could franchise him again in 27 if they wanted to. It's the same sort of statements you could make about the Bills and Cook. Like if the Bills really wanted to retain James Cook, they hold all the cards there. They'll have to pay for it, you know, in the means of a franchise tag, which is very pricey for 1 year, not ideal at all, and the player doesn't usually like it. But that's the situation. The only leverage Parsons has is that he's at a marquee position, and you know maybe Dallas will feel some pressure to do something, but they don't, in reality, have to do anything.
That's right, and they can decide to pull that lever at the end of the season, going into next season. But I guess in the meantime, you play with fire a little bit with your best player and what his feelings are about everything. Now, Terry McLaurin feels a little bit more entrenched because this has been going on for a little while, right? Feels like it's a little bit more to a kind of a crisis point of what Micah Parsons is. Maybe, you know, I know Micah Parsons, this goes back a ways as well, but it feels like Terry McLaurin, that kind of relationship feels like it's a little bit more fractured than what it is with Parsons and Dallas. I don't know, and, you know, that's just my interpretation of it, but
yeah.
when he showed up and then, you know, he didn't practice, went on a list or whatever, and now he wants traded. It just feels like there's not a good relationship there right now.
Yeah. The Dallas thing, for folks who don't know the details, because Parsons posted a lengthy explanation on, I think, originally Instagram, and it has shown up now on Twitter/X. According to Parsons, and this, I think, has already been reported to some extent, but he lays it out there plainly. This is him, presumably, maybe with the help of advisors or agents or whatever, but he says at the end of the season before last, so the end of the 23 season, he told his agent to like engage. I'd like to, you know, sign, you know, get an extension done. And this is, you know, this is before the Myles Garrett extension and before the TJ Watt. So like a bargain could have been had there probably, right? But Dallas didn't want to do anything. And Parsons' reaction to that, as he writes, is, well, okay, I'll play the 24 season. Not going to worry about it. Go do my work, right? And so he does that. The 24 season comes and goes. And he eventually comes around to having a conversation with Jerry Jones that, according to Parsons, started out about leadership and segued into talking about contract. Now, this is just the player and the owner having this conversation. And the way Parsons tells it is that when he then went to his agent and said, look, I've had this talk with Jerry, we should engage. You should call them and we'll get the ball rolling on this. That the Cowboys went dark. They thought that whatever conversations they had without the agent present at all, involved in any part of it, that Jones and Parsons, Jones thought, oh, we've got the framework for a deal here, which I just think is, it's so bizarre, it's offensive. Like, how in the world are you in the NFL business and think that you are going to make a deal with this guy, right, a premier player at a premier position, without his agent? And like suddenly that's supposed to be binding? I just think that is ridiculous.
It's Jerry Jones not understanding maybe the way things work now compared to the way they used to work back in the day. And I think Jerry, I've actually come around a lot more on Jerry Jones over the years on what he's all about. I think Jerry used to, I had a sense, and I always thought Jerry was simply, you know, about the Cowboys, doesn't matter, go screw you, as long as we make money. And actually, I think he's the opposite now. Jerry has kind of proven to be all about the NFL and the NFL making money. And I think it's kind of only, it's hurt his own team in a lot of ways because he's been so good at trying to help out. And even here in Buffalo, he's been a very big proponent. He's actually, he's the one that, I think they, I don't even know if they own Legends anymore, but that's his company and, yep, you know, the food service and all that. But he was always a big proponent of getting a new stadium here in Buffalo. And, you know, kind of harkens back to the old AFL days and NFL days where the small markets matter. And Jerry's kind of been on that train a little bit. But one of the criticisms of Jerry Jones, believe it or not, over the last few years and several years is he kind of doesn't take care of his own team and his own players anymore because he's too fixated on that. And he's become more of a guy for the league instead of his own team, which is totally bizarre.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, a lot of that. Yeah, he definitely has been someone. I know he played a role in getting this thing across the finish line here for the Bills. So hats off for that. But, man, he's botching his team, I think.
He is.
Pretty badly. Because even if you get things settled, right, like Prescott and Lamb have even talked this week or recently about, like, it's just always kind of like this. And, you know, sure, that's what the money's for, right? It should make it all go away, but no one likes to be mistreated and disrespected, and I just don't understand why he is treating some of his players this way.
I think it is, to me, my interpretation is, going back to what I just said, I think Jerry takes the philosophy of, we're the Dallas Cowboys. We have the star in our helmet. But Jerry, this isn't 1989 anymore, right, when you bought the team. And I think he believes that, hey, we're going to get every star player to want to play here, and when they are here, they're always going to resign here because we're the Dallas Cowboys. That's not how it works. And, oh, by the way, they have not won in a long time.
Right.
Right. It doesn't mean anything to a lot of guys, the Dallas Cowboys, the star. This isn't thinking back to Roger Staubach of 1970s and Tony Dorsett of 1970s or even Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith in 1990s. I mean, Micah Parsons and CeeDee Lamb weren't alive when those guys won.
We've got some folks on hold. One that wants to talk about the stadium. One that wants to talk about these trade ideas. We'll get to you folks, so stay there when we continue here. Sal Capaccio is live at Highmark Stadium. I am the Bulldog, live in our Amherst studios. We'll continue after this on WGR.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.